Good morning. Meeting's called to order. Before proceeding with any business, Mr. Cook, you have a statement to make.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A public notice of this meeting containing all items on the proposed agenda has been filed in the Office of Secretary of State as required by Chapter 551 Government Code, referred to as the Open Meetings Act. I would like for this fact to be noted in the official record of this meeting. So that everyone will have a chance to address the Commission in an orderly fashion, we will follow the ground rules, follow these ground rules today. An individual wishing to speak before the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission must first fill out and sign a speaker registration form for each item on the agenda to which you wish to speak. The chairman is in charge of the meeting, and by law, it is his duty to preserve order, direct the order of the hearing, and recognize persons to be heard. I will be assisting the chairman today as sergeant-at-arms. We have sign-up cards for everyone wishing to speak, and the chairman will call names from those cards one at a time. Each person will be allowed to speak from the podium one at a time. When your name is called, please come to the podium, state your name, who you represent, if anyone other than yourself, then state your position on the agenda item under consideration. Add supporting facts that will help the commission understand your concerns. Please limit your remarks to the specific agenda item under consideration. We'll also call up whoever's on deck coming up so that person can be ready. Each person who wants to address the commission will have 3 minutes to speak. I will keep track of time on this handy-dandy little thing right here and notify you when your 3 minutes are up. When your time is up, please resume your seat so that others may speak. Statements which are merely argumentative or critical of others will not be tolerated. There's a microphone at the podium, so it is not necessary to raise your voice. Shouting will not be tolerated. You will not be recognized out of turn by raising your hand or interrupting others. Disruptive or offensive behavior will be grounds for immediate ejection from the meeting and possible arrest and criminal prosecution. If you have written items that you want to submit to the commission, please give them to Carol Hemby or Michelle Klaus, who's seated here to my right, and they will pass that information to the commission. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Bob. Next is the approval of minutes from the previous meeting, which have already been distributed. Is there a motion for approval?
Move.
Moved by Brown, second by Ramos. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Next up is acceptance of donations, which have also been distributed. Is there a motion for approval?
Move.
Moved by Bivens and second by Friedkin. All in favor, aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Next are the service awards and special recognition. Mr. Cook.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As always, we'd like to take a few minutes at the start of the commission meeting to recognize our employees who have done long and dedicated service to the agency and to the people of Texas. We have three such folks today, one a retirement certificate and two service awards. First of all, with a retirement certificate from State Parks, Dale Martin, Program Supervisor 2, LaGrange, Texas, with 30 years of service. Dale Martin began his career with Texas Parks and Wildlife Department as a seasonal part-time employee at Washington-on-the-Brazos State Historical Site on June the 1st of 1974. The following summer, Dale worked at Lake Brownwood State Park as a summer intern. On December the 1st, 1976, Dale was hired at Galveston Island State Park as a force account laborer. Dale was promoted to Park Ranger 2 on January 20th of 1977 and transferred to the San Jacinto Monument State Park on August 1, 1979 and was promoted at that time to Park Ranger 3. It was during this time that he received a Master's of Agriculture degree through Texas A&M University in Recreation Resources Development. On June the 1st of 1981, Dale became park superintendent for the monument. During his tenure there, he helped plan and execute a major event celebrating the sesquicentennial of Texas independence, was instrumental in pioneering the reenactment of the Battle of San Jacinto, the first battleship Texas removed to dry dock for major repairs and her return to the park. On February the 1st, 1995, Dale transferred and became park manager at Monument Hill Chrissy Brewery State Historic Site, where he remained until his retirement, March 31st, 2006, retiring with 30 years of service, Dale Martin.
Okay.
Now with service awards, with 20 years of service, Sharon Hansick, Park Ranger 4, Needville, Texas. Sharon Hansick began her career with Texas Parks and Wildlife Department on April 13, 1986 at Brazos Bend State Park as a seasonal employee in maintenance. She later became a full-time hourly employee and cross-trained in office administration and interpretation. Sharon was later hired as Park Ranger 2. In addition to her regular duties, she also led Interpretive Heights, co-produced Interpretive Text, co-edited the Regional Employee Newsletter, and served as an additional duty safety officer. As her interest grew in the field of interpretation, she decided she would like to become a full-time interpreter and was hired for a position in December of 1998. For the past 7.5 years, she has been part of a highly productive and fun-filled interpretive team. She is privileged to coordinate an outstanding volunteer organization and share her enthusiasm for wildlife with the people of the greater Houston area and visitors from around the world. With 20 years of service in state parks, Sharon Hansick. Also, with 20 years of service in the Wildlife Division, Dorinda L. Scott. Dorinda Scott grew up in a small rural farming community in southeast Arkansas. Dorinda learned from her dad the passion of fishing and being outdoors, and from her maternal grandmother, she learned an appreciation for birds and nature, which have served her well in her service with the department. She is a graduate of the University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana, and began her career with Texas Parks and Wildlife on April 14, 1986 in the Resource Protection Division. She served as a liaison between the department and Texas Journal Land Office for what are now the Texas Natural Diversity Database and the Wildlife Diversity Program science staff, who soon all moved to TPWD, and she became the data manager. Later, the database and staff moved into the Wildlife Division, where she continued to manage the map, manual, and the computer components of the Natural Diversity Database, including mapping, data entry, quality control, transcription of records, and producing custom reports for environmental review needs. Currently, she does database management within the Natural Diversity Database, which has evolved into an all-electronic system with 3 cooperating database managers and a database administrator. During her tenure with the department, Dorinda has served as a member of the Tri-Agency Water Information Integration Committee, implementing Senate Bill 1, the Texas Water Bill. She was also a department member of the 5-State Gulf of Mexico Program Data Integration and Transfer Committee. With 20 years of service, Dorinda L. Scott. Also, Commissioners, this morning we are going to recognize the Southern States Boating Officer of the Year for 2006. Created to promote boating safety, the Southern States Boating Law Administrators Association is comprised of 18 states, Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands, and the District of Columbia. In June 2006, at their 45th annual conference in Lexington, Kentucky, Texas Game Warden Ron Vanderroost will be recognized for his outstanding accomplishments related to boating safety. A graduate of the 47th Game Warden Academy in January of 2001, Ron is currently stationed in Sanger, Denton County. Ron's patrol assignments within his duty station area take in 4 major bodies of water, which include Lakes Louisville, Grapevine, Ray Roberts, and the Trinity River. Ron continually goes above and beyond the required general duties by working closely with other agencies to provide an expanded water safety effort, which includes assisting with certifying Marine Safety Enforcement Officers in his county. His effort and devotion to do the best job not only makes him a leader among officers across the state in BWI and water safety enforcement, but his effort provides safer lakes for the public. Additionally, he is highly respected by boaters, landowners, sportsmen, and his fellow officers. It is my honor and privilege to present to you the 2006 Southern States Boating Officer of the Year for Texas, Game Warden Ron Vanderroost. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Next, item one on the agenda. Approval of the revised agenda, and notice that agenda item number 14 has been withdrawn. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
Moved by Ramos, second by Holmes. All in favor, aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Item two, we have a briefing matter, World Birding Center Report, Walt Dabney and Mr. Fishback.
Chairman and Commissioners, I'm Walt Dabney, State Park Director. I'm not going to be doing the briefing this morning, but I just wanted to introduce our regional director that will be talking to you about the World Birding Center. You've heard me say before, even in some of these tough times, one of the things that I enjoy most is after 40 years in this business, I'm working with the best collection of senior park managers that I know of anywhere, and that includes my service with the National Park Service. Great group. The briefing today is from Region 2, and it's on the World Birding Center, and I want to introduce Regional Director Russell Fishbeck, who's going to be doing the briefing. It's an exciting project down there, and we're making great progress on it. It's been a long haul. I hope if you haven't been there, you will go, and I think after Russell's presentation, you're going to want to do that. So with that, I'll introduce Russell Fishbeck.
Thank you, Walt. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. As Walt said, I am Russell Fishbeck, and I'm the Region 2 State Parks Director in Rockport, and one of my responsibilities is oversight of the World Birding Center, the project that I will be briefing you on this morning. The lower Rio Grande Valley of Texas has been known for years as a great birding destination, a place to see a lot of birds, a variety of them at that. Just in the four-county area of South Texas, the counties of Starr, Hidalgo, Willacy, and Cameron counties are 509 species of birds that have been documented in that county. Number 510 is waiting confirmation from Texas Birds Record Committee. That was a snow bunting that was seen on South Padre Island recently. This 120-mile corridor along the Rio Grande River stretches from Roma to South Padre Island. And in this corridor are the nine sites that make up the World Birding Center, this network of sites. These nine sites are operated by various entities, mostly municipalities, our agency, and of course the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. We operate three of those Birding Center sites. Those specifically are Benson Rio Grande Valley State Park in Mission, Estero Llano Grande State Park in Weslaco, and Resaca de la Palma State Park in Brownsville. I'd like to spend a little bit of time briefing you this morning on Benson State Park, which is, of the three sites that we operate, the only one at the present time that is open and operational to the public. Benson State Park was opened as the World Birding Center site in October of 2004. Prior to 2004, Benson was managed and operated as a traditional state park with overnight camping. As part of the new operation relative to the World Birding Center, we've sort of shifted how we operate that state park. We removed overnight camping and removed the vehicle traffic from the park. We built a complex outside of the prime habitat, outside of the park, and this is the facility you see there before you. And this headquarters complex is becoming sort of a gathering place for visitors that come to the World Birding Center. It's here that visitors come to enjoy a hot cup of coffee or cappuccino and a fresh muffin in the morning before they go out on the trails, or in the evening when it warms up a little bit, come back for a smoothie or even an ice cream sandwich that we sell there in our cafe coffee bar. Visitors also mingle around this headquarters complex to browse in our park store. We have an exhibit hall there that is sort of state-of-the-art, if you will, and it's there that visitors can get an introduction and orientation to what they're going to see in the park as well as into birding and conservation. We have a meeting and conference room space there that we use to train staff and perform many of our interpretive programs, but it's also there that we're seeing local and area businesses, interest groups, and others have their meetings, gatherings, and special events. The facilities themselves sort of serve as a demonstration area, and it's on the grounds around the headquarters that really demonstrate what we're trying to do at this particular site. We have grounds that are planted in native plants, attract all kinds of species of birds, and particularly butterflies. I was down there for a meeting earlier this year when a rare butterfly was sighted, and within 45 minutes, droves of people congregated in that complex to try to get a glimpse of this rare sighting. So we are a demonstration site in a lot of ways outside the park and an introduction to what you get to see inside Benson State Park. A big part of what we do at the World Birding Center centers around habitat. In this fast-growing part of the state, only about 3 to 5% of this habitat remains in the valley. Our three state parks combined total a little over 2,200 acres. Combined with the other six sites that make up the World Birding Center, we're looking at managing about 10,000 acres of this particular habitat, and it's critical that we continue to do that. But I'll tell you that it's a challenge as well, because we're also trying to restore a portion of it. About 21% of our total acreage, about 440 acres, we're trying to restore through revegetation and the creation of wetlands. And we do that not only with our staff, but we do it with a cadre of volunteers. And we couldn't do it without the volunteers. Volunteers help us not only in restoration projects, but they also help us in other aspects of our operation, operating a park store, helping with park maintenance, and interpretive programming. I'll tell you just a little bit of an example of an exciting thing that happened in January. We had volunteers and staff planting 700 seedlings. The mother brought four of her children with her to help with the planting that day. And after they finished planting, she gathered them up, she wrapped her arms around them, and she says, "Kids, I want you to look across this field that you've just planted and know that you've just made an investment in the future." And she then turned to our staff and she says, "I'm going to be bringing these kiddos back from time to time to watch their trees grow." So we know and we feel that it's experiences like this that are making a difference. Well, how do you get around the park now that we've taken vehicles out? Well, we provide a tram service, a shuttle service. And what we're finding is this shuttle service, while it's been a challenge to figure out how to operate efficiently, we're just about there, it's also part of the experience that we've created in the shift of operations at Benson. It's an opportunity for folks to see the park like they've never seen it before and not be distracted with a bunch of vehicles in and out of the park. Visitors can also walk and hike in. They can bike in, as you see here in this photo. You can also rent some bikes at the park. These tandem seat bikes, you can get around pretty casually and effortlessly, and it makes that experience of the visit even more enjoyable. The interpretive staff that we have at the park also use the trams as part of their programming. They do what we call tram tours. Visitors can hop on these trams, and for about 90 minutes, they get a tour of the park and get a firsthand glimpse of some things that you might not see by just taking the regular tram in and out. In an attempt to get our visitors up close and personal with not only the habitat, but the wildlife that is there, we have a couple of observation blinds that literally put you in the habitat and give you an opportunity to literally firsthand see the wildlife that's there. I would tell you that it's a great place not only stop and bird watch, but also to photograph these wildlife. Walt and I had an opportunity earlier this spring to spend about 30 minutes in one of these blinds one Saturday afternoon, and literally were just mesmerized by the green jays that just came in there by the numbers and just kind of frolicked around with each other, and then a group of javelina traipsed through after that. And it was just a neat experience to kind of get lost for a moment in this particular resource. These blinds are especially great for the uninitiated birder or the novice birder, to give them an opportunity real quickly to see what wildlife watching, bird watching can be. The Hawk Tower is kind of becoming the icon for Benson State Park. This feature is worth the experience in and of itself. This two-story structure, as you can see here in this photo, just sort of meanders its way through the habitat. And it's an experience to just walk up it as you literally go to the top. You're walking through the canopy of the tree. And once you get on the top, of course, you can see that you're then overlooking this resaca that we share with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. It's a great place to just kind of, again, get lost in the resource, spend a few minutes taking some pictures, or as we use the resource for, to do some hawk migration surveys through the hawk migrations that occur each fall and spring, and watch thousands of hawks settle above this facility. Just want to pause for just a moment to tell you just a little bit about our interpretive staff and the programming that they do at the World Birding Center. We use platforms like this, the Hawk Tower, to conduct some of our programming. But we use the trans, we use the trails, we use the resource itself to tell the story of conservation and what we're doing with this project. One of my favorite programs that our interpretive staff conducts is what we call Lunch with a Naturalist, where they literally make themselves available at the coffee bar there at the headquarters, and over a cup of coffee or over a sandwich and a drink out on the patio, visit with visitors about this project, about the latest bird sighting, the trails to get on, or about their job and what they do and how excited they are to do it. I still want a waltz phrase for just a moment, and that is the outdoor classrooms. Our parks literally are outdoor classrooms. In the case of Benson, this is a concept that is fast becoming a reality. Within the four counties, as I mentioned, in South Texas, Starr, Hidalgo, Cameron, and Willacy counties, there are 31 school districts. But just in four of those school districts, which surround our three state parks, there are in excess of 71,000 students. We are just now beginning to tap into that resource, beginning to tap into the opportunities we have to educate our youth about what we do. Our interpretive staff works very closely with the Texas Education Agency and the local districts to ensure that the programs that we're conducting mesh with the TEKS curriculum. We also provide what we call teacher workshops, or train the teacher, where we bring the teachers out and we train them. It allows them to go back to their classrooms and be better prepared, or to better prepare their students before they come out to the park. And our staff will tell you it's those moments when they see an expression on a child's face that sort of lights up, when they make that connection about whatever it is that we're educating them about, or that aha moment when it just finally connects. It's an exciting time, and those are rewarding times that just make the tough days even more bearable. Well, as you might imagine, as you probably already know, we've received lots of feedback about World Birding Center. It's no secret that our first year was a pretty challenging year, trying to figure out how to operate a coffee bar and a tram service, and still dealing with the resistance from the removal of the RV sites and the vehicular traffic. And our first season was challenging, but I'll tell you, our second season has been much more rewarding. And I think that's a trend we're going to continue to see. I'd like to share with you just a few comments we've received from various folks who've come to the World Birding Center. From one of the teachers, she says, "I was totally surprised at the quantity of the information. I will come back with family and spread the word of the valuable resource." From a visitor, "The park is very well run. The rangers are excellent, and so are the volunteers. They really try to meet your needs." From a student, elementary student, he said, "I liked how you showed us how the hawks fly and get their food with their sharp nails." From a former camper, she said, "I used to camp here. Thought I'd not like it, but I agree with the changes." And from another teacher, she said, "This is great information from classroom teachers. I'll be using these lessons and skills to teach and reach others." And of course, as you see here on the screen, a quote from Calvin Benson, the son of Elmer Benson. It's appropriate this week as we celebrate the life of former Senator Lloyd Benson that we also talk about Benson State Park and what the Benson family has contributed to our state park system back in 1944 when they donated this site to the State Parks Board. We have a couple of other sites that are not yet open. The second of our three sites is Estero Llano Grande State Park in Weslaco. We are tentatively scheduled to open this site softly the week of June 19th through 23rd. We're working out the details as we speak. This site is going to be about water. Wetlands is what makes up this site, and wetlands management is what we'll be about there. We'll have a network of trails and observation decks. We'll have a park store. There's a wonderful open-air deck out from this headquarters where you can overlook the wetlands. Lastly, there'll also be classroom and meeting space that you can use. We'll use with our interpretive staff as well as local businesses that can use and rent as well. The third of our three sites is Resaca de la Palma State Park in Brownsville. It is currently under construction. Estimations are that construction will be complete early in FY07. It's the largest of our three sites at about 1,200 acres, and we will have a tram operation at this site as well. Similar to our other sites, we'll have a park store, we'll have a network of trails and observation decks, as well as a classroom and meeting space. I'd like to introduce you to a few of our feathery friends, just a small glimpse of what awaits you at the WBC, whether it's the plain chachalaca, the green jay, the Altamira oriole, or the green kingfisher. These birds represent in a large way the four sites that the Benson family had back in 1944 that we continue today to try to manage and conserve for many to come after us. I want to thank you for this opportunity to brief you on the World Birding Center, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions you may have.
Thank you, Russell. I was had an opportunity to be by there not too long ago, and I was really impressed with the job you've done, and the visitor center is really an excellent opportunity for people to come educated on birds and the outdoors. It's a unique design too, which I think until you get inside that complex, you don't realize how well it fits in the landscape.
Absolutely.
You have a nice place to work. Any questions for Russ from the World Birding Center? Thanks very much. Appreciate
your
work.
Appreciate it.
Next up, Melissa Parker, briefing item, agenda item 3, the Inland Paddling Trail Program.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Commissioner. My name is Melissa Parker, and I work for the Inland Fisheries Division down in San Marcos, Texas, as the Riparian Assessment Team Leader. Today I'd like to talk to you a little bit about our Texas Paddling Trails Program, and that is a joint program between the Inland Fisheries Division and the Coastal Fisheries Division. And we fostered this program to, in order to enable more people to get out onto our public waterways while fostering conservation of these valuable aquatic resources. We have several criteria that we established in developing these paddling trails. And the first one is that we'd like to have a population center within 50 to 100 miles of a major metropolitan area, simply because we want these people to be able to go out and perform a day trip on a river and then be able to get back home should they choose. We also would like for the public access on these paddling trail sites to be no more than 4 to 12 miles apart, and obviously we'd like to have some parking at these access sites. And again, this is just so that we can get people out onto, say, for example, a river, and they could get off within the same day. We need adequate water depth or flow, at least seasonally. And this is a really important consideration, is that we need a local partner to maintain the access site. We don't have the manpower to go out and maintain them ourselves, pick up trash, make sure the signs are still standing, that kind of thing. So the local partners are very important. We also would like to have the presence of natural or cultural features. What would make someone want to get out onto that particular body of water? You know, are there beautiful riffles or a neat wildlife corridor to look at, some sort of cultural or historic feature? And then finally, it's very helpful to have rental canoes or kayaks from a local source for those who would like to try paddling but don't have their own boat. And right now, the coastal paddling trails were established in the mid-1990s. We have seven of them, and they've been widely popular along the coast. But we didn't have any inland trails to speak of. So we've just developed our first inland paddling trail in Luling, Texas, and it's been a huge success. This is a six-mile trail, and it's on the San Marcos River. And the put-in is at the Highway 90 crossing just west of Luling, while the takeout is at the old historic Zedler Mill crossing at the Highway 80 intersection within the city of Luling itself. And that's what really makes this paddling trail unique, is that the Zedler Mill is undergoing a restoration scoping process, and the community has formed what's called the Zedler Mill Steering Committee, and they've undergone this huge process where they've had public input, public meetings to see what they want to do with the site. And what came out in two of the public meetings was that they wanted increased or enhanced access at the Zedler Mill site, and they also wanted a water trail. And so at about the same time, we had decided, hey, let's move into this inland paddling trail scenario. So it worked out really, really well that we just kind of fell into each other's lap. And it was truly a collaborative effort. We had the Parks and Wildlife Department working on it. And, of course, the City of Luling and the Zedler Mill Steering Committee. And then the Guadalupe Blanco River Authority. And we were able to provide things such as, you know, field expertise, mapping, things like that for creating the trail, whereas the City of Luling actually went out and improved the access at both locations, and they're applying for grants to continue to enhance the trail and the Zedler Mill restoration. And then the Guadalupe Blanco River Authority actually funded the purchase of the old Zedler Mill site and have been quite helpful in establishing the trail as well. And it was such a hugely successful project for the whole community that they really got behind this, that when we had our ribbon cutting, our communications division just put up a whiz-bang media event for it on March the 29th. And we had people just come out of the woodwork for that. And so when we did the ribbon cutting, we decided we'd make it special and do it across the river, but we wanted all three of these partners to be involved. And so the mayor of Luling, who's in the blue boat, cut the river along with, you may recognize the guy in the second boat, Commissioner Montgomery, came out and gave a really nice talk and helped out with the ribbon cutting, which the community was so excited to have a commissioner from Parks and Wildlife there. So we really appreciate your support of that. And then, of course, we had the general manager of the Guadalupe Blanco River Authority, and they all cut the ribbon same time, and nobody fell out of the boat, so that was a big success. This trail was so successful, and it hit so many different venues of media across the state that we actually won an award as a national conservation success by the National Park Service. And it was really interesting because part of that award is raising awareness for conservation of the resource, for conservation of a historic site, which is the Zedler Mill, and for increasing recreational access. And this trail did all three of those things. And so I do have a quick media, VNR, they call it, video news release, that I'd like to show you at this time.
Experts in fisheries, river ecology, and tourism for Texas Park and Wildlife, the City of Newland, and the Guadalupe Blanco River Authority, fly out a new paddling trail on the San Marcos River.
And it's beautiful out here.
What makes this river a paddling trail is that it now has public access points to put in and put out kayaks and canoes.
A lot of people are afraid to travel down the river because they're not sure where they can put in their takeout and if it's privately or not. So this is a nice area where the food and the takeout are monitored, it's safe, they're clean.
It just takes about 2.5 hours between the Highway 90 bridge in Newland to the old Zedler Mill on Highway 87. That's about 6 miles on the river.
There's lots of really interesting stuff that's possible to do more about. The second city traveling along is not any access points, and they don't really know about that. And if someone provides information, gives you a chance to walk around the water, and once they've done it, they'll be different.
It's already bringing new people to town. It's really put the tide of all of us, the number of people that are coming to town and living a little money here.
Not only is the city of Luling a boost to their economy, they're also building new content with the air. The city purchased an old Zedler Mill. This time to renovate the building, add a facility, and a theater, and restaurant.
I am like to come here for a day, put in at 9 and get out here at Zedler, have a nice lunch. If they wanted to continue down to Palmetto State Park to camp there in the evening, this would be a great package.
For Texas Park and Wildlife, this is Green Lake Online.
And so I think you could see some of these from the video news release, but there are many benefits that we've identified to creating paddling trails. And the first one, and near and dear to my heart, is that we can promote conservation of the water resource. If we can get people out on the river, we can get them to care about conserving it. They feel an ownership for it. We can also promote community quality of life and ecotourism. And, for example, in Luling, we had so many locals that had never been on the San Marcos River or that stretch of it ever. And they were just thrilled with the awareness of what they had to promote. We can also educate users regarding proper use of public waterways. And, you know, a lot of that's intuitive. Clean up your trash as you go. You know, don't yank up seagrass on the coast. Respect, you know, wildlife. But it does give us a new opportunity to educate users about private land in Texas and the fact that while the rivers may be publicly owned, the private land adjacent to it is not, and we're able to put that up on our kiosks and our signs and our maps and things like that to kind of get a dialogue going. And it's actually really been quite helpful. We've had a lot of people not realize that before. We can provide a lot of assistance in creating these paddling trails. First of all, of course, obviously we can work with the community and its surrounding landowners to help develop or facilitate the development of the trail. We can develop maps for them, and on those maps we can actually summarize river conservation and ethics information, as well as the ecological and wildlife values of that particular site. We can provide the paddling trail signs, and we can also provide all the information for the kiosks. For the Luling Trail, because that was our first trail, we did build 2 kiosks for them. In the future, what we're planning to do is we can put together the information for the communities and let them use our template to develop kiosks for future trails. We can also have a beautiful website that our communications division developed. It's a paddling trail website, and it's in the template that we can use where we don't have to worry so much about everything being really simple. It's a beautiful, beautiful website that has been highly visited since we've developed it. And then we can obviously do media promotion and of the trail, as well as related community facilities. And we have a few goals for this program moving forward in the immediate future, and that is that we want to create 1 to 3 paddling trails annually. It takes some time to work with local communities, so you can't just pop them up overnight. It takes a little while to gain the trust and to work with the community. We also have right now an existing website. It's called the Texas River Guide, and it's got information about public access points in Texas. And we have an individual, Ron Smith, in the Inland Fisheries Division who has been conducting training sessions for law enforcement. And then the game wardens have been going out and gathering information on public access sites. You know, a picture of the site, is there parking, is there bait stores nearby, you know, that type of thing. If there's a ramp, what's the slope? And we'd like to get all that input and load it up so that we can use it for developing more trails. As well as if we don't have a trail, people will know more where they can go and how long they should expect to be on the river. We also want to investigate funding opportunities. Right now we're working just out of our baseline budget, but we're going to look for grants and things like that to help in creating additional enhanced access sites. And then we would also, as we're developing these trails, something that we're keeping in mind is that we would really like to tie that in with our existing department facilities, our state parks and our wildlife management areas. And State Parks Division has been very helpful with that and helped us do a survey to find out what type of amenities we have out there and who we can begin to work with. So we have our 7 coastal trails. We have our first inland paddling trail. And then we have 3 communities that have actually filled out an application and sent it in and asked us if we'd work with them to develop additional trails. And so the next one in line will be the community of Goliad. And that's on the San Antonio River. And again, it'll be another 6-mile trail, but it will end at our Goliad State Park. So that'll be a neat trail. And it's actually, when you say the San Antonio River, people kind of back up, but it's really a beautiful, beautiful spot. And then we had the community of Weberville on the Colorado River has filled out an application, and we've been talking with them. And then recently, the community of Menard out on the San Saba River. So we will work with them and be developing new trails in the future if you have any questions.
Thank you, Melissa. It's great, great job. As you know, and I know Bob knows, paddling and some of those issues between access and riverside ownership has not always been easy in Texas, and y'all have done a great job making it work, and I want to thank you for your work, and I hope you'll be at the San Antonio River paddling and bring Mark Cuban with you.
If you could deliver Peter Holt out to Mark Cuban.
Yeah, that might be fun. We'll do that.
That'd be a great fundraiser.
We'll put him in one canoe.
That is a fundraiser. Robert?
Did Commissioner Parker turn his boat over? I was curious on that trip. Did he stay afloat? I mean Montgomery, not Parker.
No,
yeah.
He stayed afloat, yes.
He did stay afloat. I had a question for you. This is a six-mile trip on the river. Can you go beyond that? He made mention of being able to go on down and to the state park. And
yes.
So if you do that, what would be the total length of the
Total length is another 13 miles to Palmetto State Park.
Oh, really?
That's a little bit of a longer stretch. You probably want to break it into 2 days. But
mm-hmm.
It is possible to go on. In fact, that's we're planning to link that up, you know, as the next
segment. That's great. You did a great job. Thank you.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to just ask, these other communities, would their plans qualify for the local parks grant? I don't know if Tim's here. But if they don't have the money necessarily to get started, could they get a match and then work with our local parks grant, assuming it is reinstated, its funding?
Right. I think that is the problem now, is that
there's not enough money. But they would qualify. Something like that would qualify?
It sure would.
Extra point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Just one. For those that may not be experienced in this, do you all rent the boats or the little rafts or whatever you call them?
The department does not, but we do have all the local liveries and rental shuttle places listed on the website, so that when people go to that particular website, they can click and it'll list them, and you can click on their name and it'll get you all the contact information.
Mm-hmm.
So
then theoretically you could rent it upstream and then
you sure could,
and then leave it
at Sam Marcus and Martindale have quite a little canoe livery industry. It's about to get really busy there. Was it, Bob, June 10th? The water safari? Yeah, my son's going to be paddling in that along with one of his buddies. So that's where they go nonstop marathon canoe race from San Marcos to the Gulf.
Do they ever do it upstream?
There they go.
Bob could.
Bob might be able to do that, but I don't know.
If it's a true race, it ought to be upstream.
There you go.
Mr. Chairman.
Done a great job. Yeah, John.
Ms. Parker, I don't know if anybody flipped on the recent trip that you're talking about. My wife and I did the Neches River Rendezvous last year. My wife had never been in a canoe. We flipped. She took a hold of a branch because she didn't want it to get it in her hair. And the canoe went on, and we stayed with the branch. But anyhow, on June the 3rd, in fact, we do.
Gene, get that
video. On June the 3rd, this coming June the 3rd, will be the Neches River Rendezvous. That will be an event there in East Texas. We'll float the Neches River from Anderson Crossing between Cherokee and Houston County down to the 103 West Bridge, and then Temple Inland is doing a lunch for 300 canoes there at North Boggy Slough. If you would like to come, we'd love to have you.
All right, well, thank you. We have a person on our River Advisory Board, Gina Donovan,
Gina.
Who keeps us informed of all that, too. So thank you.
A couple of quick comments, if I could.
Yeah, Phil.
This program does deliver on what we said we do in the Land and Water Plan. I appreciate you all staying focused on it there. It responds to what Darcy Bontempo presented yesterday, which is to package finite, discrete experiences for urban dwellers who can do them in a half a day to and from their homes. And for that reason, it has the promise of getting people out in the outdoors with recreational sports in a way that they wouldn't know to do otherwise. It's too hard to figure out on your own. The communications division did a great job advertising this. I think within 2 days you had calls from three cities.
Oh, yeah.
We want one. When do we get one? How do we get one? And some of the cities who are moving slowly all of a sudden felt like they were left behind. So the program's got momentum. It's a wonderful economic development tool for a small community to drive business and activity, people that will eat in the restaurants, shop in the shops, who would not otherwise go there. I'm hopeful we can see 15 or 20 of these over the next 5 to 7 years. I think that's really achievable once they are seen and proceed to be seen. I do hope include in the goals, once you've got a core of good projects, which is on the horizon in the near term, to really reach out around each of the major urban areas and build an aggregation around each of the major urban areas. I think then we've really got a statewide presence. I think, Melissa, you deserve a lot of credit. You've been a great champion for the program. You've stayed with it. You've thought it through really well. Bob Spain's really worked on it. Larry McKinney, Lydia and Darcy and Aaron on the communications team. I know I'm leaving Phil. Came down to help show support for the program, and I think that there's been a lot of people involved. It's a great way the department is using expertise without a lot of financial commitment to make things possible for communities and get people in the outdoors and recreational sports. Last thought, I hope we will take this approach and adapt it to mountain biking and equestrian activities. A lot of the principles here can be used to market to those groups more broadly. They're using our parks now, clearly, but there's a way, I think, to build a broader statewide program in each of those areas around some of the principles we've got here and really market very widely to the those three recreational sports and put more people in our parks without a big additional investment. So thank you for a great job.
And, of course, I'll always find a way to work my water message in here. It's not going to work if you don't have any water in those rivers, right? Yeah. And that might be the first thing we make sure we have before we sell too many kayak and canoe deals. But thank you, and I want to thank the River Advisory Board, Bob. I know that they've been very helpful in all this. Any other questions for Melissa? Again, well done. Thank you. Next up, nonprofit partner resolution. It's an action item from Ann Bright.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Ann Bright, General Counsel. The department is authorized by the Parks and Wildlife Code to cooperate with nonprofit partners. I think that most of you are familiar with our official nonprofit partner, the Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, but we also have a lot of other nonprofit partners. And we split those other nonprofit partners into two groups. There's just sort of the regular nonprofit partners. These are pretty much any nonprofit that cooperates with us. And then we have our friends groups, and we refer to those as our closely related nonprofit partners. And those nonprofit partners are associated with a specific facility. The Parks and Wildlife Code also requires that these nonprofit partners receive commission approval. So we're here today. We do this usually about once a year to add to and subtract from our list of nonprofit partners. New nonprofit partners are the Association of Midwest Fish and Game Law Enforcement Officers, the Saltwater Anglers League of Texas, this is actually the Trinity Bay branch of that, and the Texas Travel Industry Association and the Zedler Mill Foundation. We also have some new closely related nonprofit partners, the Friends of Casa Navarro, Hill Country State Natural Area Partners, and the Friends of Huntsville State Park, and as you can see, these are all associated with specific facilities. There's also a few that we're taking off. The ones that we're taking off are either because they do not exist anymore or they really don't do any work with us. Lake Ray Roberts Sportsman Association and the Mahia Bass Club. We also have a few closely related nonprofit partners that we'd like to take off the list. The Admiral Nimitz Foundation and the Friends of Brightleaf are obviously being taken off because we are no longer in charge of those facilities. Friends of Choke Canyon, the Confederate Reunion Ground State Park Historical Society, the Friends of Bantam Battleground, Friends of Fort Parker, and the Friends of Matagorda Island Foundation. And all of these are really just no longer in existence. This is the resolution that will be presented to you, and this is the recommended motion. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Ann? Where does the foundation fit in there? Did I miss something?
The commission is also authorized to designate an official nonprofit partner as opposed to other nonprofit partners, and the Parks and Wildlife Foundation is the official nonprofit partner.
Okay.
This won't impact them.
That doesn't impact them. Okay. All right. Any other questions for Ann on this item? Thank you, Ann. Is there comments from the commission? Motion on this item? Moved by Friedkin, second by Ramos. All in favor, aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion carries. Thank you. Next up, briefing item number five, item five, Operation Pescador. Pete?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Mr. Cook, good morning. For the record, my name is Peter Flottis, Director of Law Enforcement. This morning I'd like to discuss Operation Pescador, a law enforcement operation along the Mexican border on Falcon Reservoir, where we targeted primarily illegal commercial fishing on our side. What's problematic to us on this particular impoundment is that on the Mexican side, gill netting is legal, but on our side it's not. And we've been working this particular activity for years, but we wanted to be able to impact those that were funding this type of operation. So we conducted Operation Pescador, where we brought in game wardens from all over the state to supplement the existing district that was working this. I brought along today, present in the audience, is Captain Chris Huff and Major Alfonso Vielma, who planned and implemented this program. We also took a holistic approach to law enforcement, where we not only did the overt patrols as well as the covert operations, but we included the community and other partners to make this operation a success. Also, we had a lot of work done by our communications division to put the message out, the conservation message out to the general public as to what was going on, and inform the community and the state as to the situation on Falcon Reservoir. This operation also complemented Governor Perry's initiative on the Mexican border by providing an increase in force. While it benefited primarily conservation, which is our primary mission, it also benefited Texas as a whole and our collective security. With this, I'd like to do a new spot that was produced by our communications division.
With this, I'd like the commission to hear from the man who actually carried it out, Captain Chris Huff, who's a district supervisor in this area. And with that, I'll turn it over. You can hear it from the horse's mouth, and there's no better way to hear how this operation went about than that way. Chris?
Chairman? Commissioner, Executive Director, I appreciate this opportunity to brief you on our Operation Pescador. My name's Chris Huff. I'm Region 5, District 3 Supervisor. Zapata County is the site for Falcon Lake Reservoir. The dam was constructed in 1954. The lake is approximately 20 miles long and 3 miles wide. Since the 1950s, this lake and reservoir has been plagued with commercial fishing activity. Law enforcement personnel view this lake as a homeland security threat. And this buoy or marker that you see on the slide is one of 14 markers that divide the U.S. and Mexico. Our situation on Falcon Lake is that Mexico commercial fishermen are constantly entering Texas waters to fish illegally. As Colonel Floyd has said, the gill nets are legal on the Mexico side, but on the U.S. side, they're illegal. And these Mexico commercial fishermen also smuggle drugs and illegal aliens. So when we stop a boat like you see here on the slide, we don't know whether we're stopping a drug smuggler or a commercial fisherman. So this presents an officer safety concern. As you all are aware, that border violence is on the increase. There's been several instances of shooting at Border Patrol and their boats. There's been large seizures in Laredo, Texas of explosive and grenades. There's constant gunfire battles on the Rio Grande and in Nuevo Laredo. There's been reports that drug lords are hiring MS-13 gang members to protect their loads. It'd be very easy for these commercial fishermen or smugglers to set game wardens up. They know that that whenever they enter Texas waters, that the game wardens are going to try to stop them. And all they have to do is, when we make our approach, is open fire on us, or better yet, pitch a grenade in one of our boats. So all these threats were taken into consideration when we were in the planning phase, and appropriate training was provided for our game wardens. This slide here is a slide of a case that we made in 2002, and there's three subjects, and I know it's kind of hard to see, but there's three subjects that are arrested in there, and that's about 1,000 pounds of marijuana. Our main goal was to deter illegal commercial fishing. Game warden would stop all vessels entering Texas waters from Mexico. They also check for water safety and sports fishing violations. Commercial fishermen in possession of illegal nets were arrested and transported to Zapata County Jail. And as the colonel said, we seized their vessels and their nets. When we were in the planning stages of our operation, we decided we wanted to do something different. Saturation patrols on Falcon Lake weren't anything new. We have been working Falcon Lake for 4 decades. So we decided we'd publicize our operation and utilize game wardens from across the state to implement our program. Our program called for utilization of experienced game wardens as boat operators, because they had the knowledge of the lake and they had the boating skills to perform safely and effectively during high-speed chases. Our plan also called for the use of high-tech equipment, GPS and GIS personnel to assist in planning and recording our activities. We utilized the department helicopter to assist wardens in conducting searches and arrests. The helicopter is also instrumental in locating old abandoned nets that were floating in the lake. We also developed a comprehensive reporting program to record our activities. Officer safety was our number one priority. All game wardens participating in this operation were provided tactical training and information regarding their specific duties and responsibilities. patrol boat teams provided high and low visibility patrols, and game wardens checked for compliance of sport fishing, water safety, and commercial fishing laws. As you can see, some of our clients that we arrested are happy and very photogenic. I don't know why they're so happy. The duties of a spotter were very important in this operation. The spotter or the landman was positioned on a high vantage point location that provided a good view of the area of his responsibility. Some of his duties consisted of assisting patrol boats of potential violators entering into Texas waters, providing communications among personnel, taking custody of the violators and contraband, and ensuring all personnel were out of the water at the end of the shift. Due to officer safety considerations, we started off with, I think, 16 game wardens that we were going to have out there, and we bumped it up to 20 plus supervisory personnel. The game wardens were divided into two groups. As the colonel said, we had one group would work high visibility, the other group was going to work low visibility. Group A worked day shift and high visibility kept capacity, and B night shift. The day shift consisted of at least four patrol boats with at least two game wardens per boat. Personnel on the day shift were encouraged to make as many contacts with the public as possible. Group B worked nights and low visibility capacity and consisted of four patrol boats with at least two game wardens per boat. At least two spotters were assigned to each group. Spotters were positioned on land and acted as observers, transporters of prisoners, and provided internal communications among boat teams. Group B of the night shift utilizes a camp house located in a remote area out of the sight of the public. So they really didn't know what we were doing at night. Maps such as this one were generated by the GIS personnel. When I say GIS personnel, these are game wardens that are trained to gather information from GPSs and download them into computers and then allow them to print out maps such as y'all have been passed out. Also, I left a large map back in the annex there if y'all want to look at that in a break. These maps were very useful in the planning patrols and documenting any important locations for court appearances at later dates. Comprehensive forms and procedures were developed to provide management with information regarding the progress and expenditures of the operation on a daily basis. Some of the data that was collected was a number of contacts. Number of contacts, number of citations, number of arrests, number of seizures, important waypoints, equipment that was used. We also captured the miles and hours that the equipment was used, expenditures, repairs, fuel purchases, etc., and a narrative of any significant activities or events that occurred during that day. This is some of the specialized equipment that was needed for this operation. All wardens were required to have this equipment ready accessible. 28 violators were arrested during this operation. The operation began on February 21st, went through April 14th. Twenty boats and motors were seized during this operation. By the way, the replacement value in Mexico for gill nets is approximately 75 cents a foot. And a replacement value for a fishing vessel, including the motor, is approximately $7,000. So like the Colonel said, we're trying to take the profit out of illegal fishing by seizing their equipment. $98,150 feet of gill net, or 18.6 miles of illegal nets, were seized during this operation. How many pounds of fish do you think 18.6 miles of fish would catch in one day period? We estimate about 1,800 pounds a day. By the way, on this bottom slide there, that is Major Butch Shoup pulling net. And this says a lot for our management people to come down and be part of the team down there. Here's some more nets that were seized during the operation. Also, if you notice on the lower slide, that's Lieutenant Colonel Craig Hunter pulling nets. He really was there. We got a picture of him. but really, I mean, he's there leading by example. That's cool. In conjunction with this Operation Pescador that we had, Captain Hellams and his district game wardens patrolled the Rio Grande River in Webb County. They patrolled 170 miles in a two-day period. They seized 1,100 feet of trot lines and 150 feet of gill net. Most importantly, they gathered waypoints of illegal crossings and other geographical data that would be downloaded into the GIS system for future patrol planning. This operation has provided the public with a clean and safe environment, and we have conserved some of our precious resources during this operation. The operation was officially over with on April the 14th, but our law enforcement division is committed to providing effective conservation law enforcement on Falcon Lake. We're still conducting large operations on Falcon Lake each month, in addition to daily patrols. We're still utilizing game wardens from across the state to accomplish this mission, and we're still continuing to publicize our success of Falcon Lake. Since the close of the operation on April the 14th, we've seized an additional 7 boats and motors, arrested 7 illegal fishermen, and seized an additional 15,300 feet of gill net. So we're committed, and we're going to continue our job on Falcon Lake. And that concludes my presentation. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Okay, that is very, very impressive, Pete. And Chris, I commend you on your work. I couldn't help but think if you might be able to train some of the federal folks on how to efficiently work on the border. You said it's 75 cents the cost of them to replace a foot of gill net?
Yes, sir.
And you're pulling it out for about 50 cents. That's a good deal. You got them. There. Yeah. I'm just doing some quick arithmetic there. If you can get it out of there for 50 cents and it costs them 75 cents to put a foot back in, you're going to win.
We plan to.
I commend you on doing that in such an efficient way that you can get it done for 50 cents a foot.
Yes, sir. And when you factor in the boats, we actually made a profit. 22 boats times $7,000 a piece. We put a dent in the people who are funding this, the cooperatives on the other side of the river. Captain Huff reports that the vessels that are showing up now are a little bit poorer than the ones you see now on the film, but
not as efficient. Yeah,
I think we're doing accomplishing a conservation in an efficient manner. We're working in partnership with the community, which is very important to us. The people of Zapata and Laredo and all up and down the border, and as anywhere else in Texas, we working together with the community makes more and more effective conservation protection mechanism. It's a holistic approach to law enforcement, and that's the way we would like to continue our business.
Where are they selling these fish? Is it subsistence or is it a commercial market in Mexico?
It's a commercial market as opposed to Amistad, where you don't have this type of of activity. You have some, but not to this extent. Primarily, it's quick access to the markets in Monterrey and Tampico. A lot of these arrestees were coming from all throughout the Mexican Republic. And again, that was the place. There's fish there, so they were on the Texas side, so they were coming after it. But we will continue to do our best to deter them and apprehend them. And of course, there's the other things that come as part of being Texas peace officers, as Mr. Cook said yesterday, that our duty, by our mere presence, we deter all the other collateral activities.
Well, I want to echo Joe's comments, and congratulate both of you. I, being from Laredo, I'm very much on the ground, and the border violence is as bad or worse than you hear in the media. It's really, really bad. And when I learned of your Operation Pescador, my concern was the safety and the risk that you and the rest of the game wardens took, because the reaction from these type of individuals is drastic, some of the stuff that we hear about. So first of all, I admire you for taking those risks. It was a very dangerous mission, but equally as important is the fact that you all are committed to the resource. As we know, and Phil knows it better than anyone, for years Falcon Lake has been one of the top bass lakes in the state. And some 5 or 6 years ago, we had a task force that I headed in an effort to try and get some international cooperation from a law enforcement standpoint. And as much as Phil and Inland Fisheries can keep restocking Falcon Dam, just like it's going in, it's going out. And I always said that it's only half of the solution. We only have half of the solution. And until we get our Mexican counterparts to commit to have a similar effort, it's going to be very, very hard. But in spite of all of that, we can't back off and continue to just ignore it. But again, congratulations. It was a never-ending problem that we have on the border. And what's really frightening, as many people die in Nuevo Laredo, Mexico, as in Iraq on a daily basis. That's kind of shocking, and that's not advertised. But for you guys to go down there and work at night with your limited equipment, we all recognize that you all need better and more sophisticated equipment. But you still took the big step. That says a lot for you. And Bob, thank you for supporting it.
Thank these gentlemen. They did a great job.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate it.
There's no further questions.
Thank you. Good job. Thank you. Next up, agenda item 6, Mike Berger, Pheasant Proclamation.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. For the record, I'm Mike Berger, Wildlife Division Director. I'm here this morning to talk to you about the change in the Panhandle pheasant bag limit. As you know, a few years ago, we extended the pheasant season from 16 days to 30 days in 37 Panhandle counties. And at the same time, we reduced the daily bag limit from 3 roosters to 2 roosters at that time. And analysis of the harvest data indicates that the harvest has not changed as a result of this. We're harvesting about the same number of birds regardless of whether we're doing a 16-day or a 30-day season or have a 2 or 3 bird per day bag limit. So we put this item out to expand the bag limit back to 3 birds daily for public comment, and we received one response to that, and it was in favor of this resolution. So we would recommend that we expand the season or expand the daily bag limit from 3 birds to 6 cocks daily, and the possession limit from 2 to 6 cocks in possession. So we'd recommend that you adopt the resolution that the Commission adopts an amendment to 6560 concerning pheasant with changes as necessary to the proposed text as published on April 21st issue of the Texas Register.
Thanks, Mike. We have one person signed up on this item, Kirby Brown, Texas Wildlife Association.
Good morning, Commissioners, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kirby Brown with TWA, and we're just here to support the staff proposal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kirby. We had two things today that are on point with our 10-year plan. It's amazing. How did we do that? the plan. Any other? Yeah, need a motion. Move approval from Montgomery, second by Holmes. All in favor, aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Thanks for your work on that, Mike. Next up.